the nightmare.
I could feel it, you know. I could feel the Imperium moving inside that dragon as it licked my face. It was angry at me.
He cocked his head, considering her.
You were angry at me for those children. I know.
Was this a challenge? Riel's hackles rose. Yes, I was angry. I wanted to frighten you. Lord Derwin threw up his hands.
My king, is this the talk of someone we can trust to stand beside our children? Much less parade about recklessly in front of thousands of people. Frighten me, you did,
the Archon continued, ignoring the outburst and leaning forward across the table. A new light glinted in his eyes.
I didn't think you would kill me. Not yet. But I wondered how far you'd go.
Not yet. A thrill skipped down Riel's body. She could not look away from the Archon's narrow, bright gaze. Those eyes seemed to see everything inside her. The power even now leaping high in her blood. The presence of Corian sitting pensive in her mind. And the truth. That truth was this. A dark kernel of regret stewed inside her. And if she could go back and live the trial over again, that hard black knot might just be enough to change her mind. To not stay the dragon's claws, and instead, let it feed. The Archon's smile grew, as if he could see Riel's thoughts plainly on her face. A sharp knock on the great hall doors disrupted the agitated silence, and when a page entered, Riel relaxed slightly, glad for the distraction. Audric stood near, arms tense at his side. She wanted to turn into him, to hide her face in the warmth of his chest. She didn't want to hide there forever. Just for a while. Was it so wrong to wish for that?
Father, Audric's voice carried a new note of worry. What is it?
Riel glanced up at the king. He held a small, curled slip of paper, a message from the royal aviary, and on his face was a stark absence of expression. He had retreated somewhere. He did not want to be reading this note in front of an audience.
Three attacks, he said flatly. Along the border. Castle de Arvitaine. The castle of the Three Towers. Castle Barbarak.
He paused, his mouth in a hard line.
73 Seldarian soldiers have been killed. 6 2 from each post, survived and fled south to the nearest villages.
My God, Queen Genevieve's hand went to her throat. Did their reports include what attacked them? Or who?
It came during the night, read the king. It came without sound and without warning.
An eerie silence bled through the room. King Bastian stopped reading. Audric snatched the note from his hands.
Audric, snapped the king. I'd turn in the dark, Audric continued reading, and another would fall. White as bone their faces were, and still like they'd been caught in the middle of a scream.
The king stormed around the table, ripped the note from Audric's hands, and crumpled it in his fist.
These northern posts are bitter and cold. A pale face is no strange thing.
Audric watched him gravely.
Two survivors from each post can be no coincidence. Can't it? Don't start raving at me about your mad theories, Audric. The signs have been clear for some time now.
Audric ignored his father and addressed the entire table.
The longer we wait to face them head on, the deadlier the consequences will become. Science,
Bastian laughed harshly.
Storms and revolutions in distant lands. Soldiers being killed on a border between unfriendly nations. Yes, indeed.
His voice took an unfamiliar, sarcastic turn.
I've never heard of such things happening. Truly, we are at the brink of some magical undoing.
And what about Lady Riel? You cannot look at her performance in the trials and call it anything but extraordinary.
He has a point, said Tal quietly. I've worked with Riel for years, and the prophecy,
Magister Bellunon, King Bastian snapped. Until I have asked for your opinion, you will take care to remain silent in my presence.
Tal met the king's gaze with only a little flare of defiance, but it was enough to make Riel's heart swell with love for him.
Yes, my king, Tal replied. The prophecy, King Bastian continued, looking around at all of them, cannot even be dependably interpreted.
How many official translations of our Yara's words exist?
20? 25?
34, replied the Archon at once. Though the differences between some are minimal.
But even a single word can mean the difference between a prophecy.
The king shot a dark look at Audric.
And an entertaining story that no learned man takes seriously.
Magister Duval's eyebrows shot up.
Your Majesty, this is rather bold of you to say in front of the entire council, and the Archon himself.
All of whom answer to me, I'll remind you.
Bastian stalked away to stand before the windows and look out at the setting sun. When at last he turned back around, he looked weary but resolute.
I apologize for my outburst, Your Holiness. I do not think the prophecy a mere story, nor do I think the intelligence of you and your magisters to be anything less than exceptional.
The Archon inclined his head.
You are most gracious, my king.
I'll speak no more of this tonight. Armand?
Riel's father rose from his chair and joined his king. At the doors, he glanced back once at Riel, and she saw a flicker of concern in his grey eyes. The look frightened her. Ever since the trials had begun, with Riel's life imperiled every week, her father had kept himself closed off from her, even more than usual. She saw him only during their mornings at the obstacle course, and sometimes in the halls of Bangard. Encircled by her guards, she would greet him politely, and he would return the sentiment with a mere nod. And so, even the smallest change in expression on that hard face was of note. Something about the message from the north and the king's reaction had pricked at the inconquerable Lord Commander Dardenne. As the council rose with rustlings and murmurs, Audric turned to Riel, then glanced at Ludovine.
We must speak in private, he said, quietly. Now.
Audric, my love. Queen Genevieve extended her hand toward him. Her brocaded grey gown caught the red light of the setting sun and cast strange, harsh lines across her face. Come with me. Your uncle and I thought we could all enjoy some tea together.
So you can scold me again and speak ill of Lady Riel? Audric said it loudly enough for everyone still in the room to hear. I have far better things to do.
Then he threw his mother a swift, angry look and left the hall. Riel nearly burst out laughing at the affronted expression on Queen Genevieve's face, but before she could, Ludovine took her firmly by the elbow and rushed her out of the hall. Only once in the familiar quiet of Audric's rooms did Riel's nervous laughter finally escape. She collapsed on her favourite chaise by the window, a shabby old thing so comfortable that she forbade Audric from ordering another. Ludovine sank into her own favourite chair by the fire.
I don't see what's so funny, Riel.
What isn't funny? The fact that Audric insulted his mother in front of the entire council? Or that your father looked like he was trying to make me drop dead using only the force of his stare? Or that even as the king scolded me, she thought a little wildly, I was talking to an angel in my head. Please, don't make light of my father's anger, Ludovine said.
It won't serve any of us well.
And then, Riel continued, there's the fact that Audric and I nearly... Well, she flushed, losing her nerve. And yet here we all are, acting as if nothing has happened.
Audric tensed. Riel, can we please not talk about that right now? I know you and Ludovine have discussed it, but there are political ramifications of any changes made to the agreement between our families.
No, Riel set her jaw. I insist we talk about it. This very night. It's unfair to all of us until we do.
Into the silence that followed, Ludovine spoke gently.
She's right, Audric.
Audric leaned heavily against his desk.
If I could give up my crown and my duty, he said, and leave this place behind with only you at my side.
He glanced at Riel. The quiet anguish on his face seized her heart.
I would do it in an instant, with Lou's blessing.
Abandon your birthright. Leave your country without an heir.
Riel scoffed, tears standing hot in her eyes.
You'd never dare.
You're wrong.
He stormed away from them to face the starlit windows, his shoulders high and tense.
I do it for you. Sometimes I think I'd betray everything I hold dear for the chance to...
His voice broke. He fell silent. Riel turned away, arms tightly crossed over her front. Audric's servants had prepared his fire for the night. The crackling flames and popping wood were the only sounds in the room for several long minutes. Then Ludovine cleared her throat.
There's no need to give up anything, you know. Not the crown. And not each other. You would just need to be... discreet.
She smoothed her skirts.
I could help you. As needed.
Riel stared at her. Ludovine had taken her to Garva Randell for a contraceptive tonic, yes, but to hear her suggest such a thing so plainly, as if they were all merely discussing the weather, left Riel without words.
Audric laughed in astonishment. Lou, are you suggesting what I think you're suggesting?
That you be together?
Ludovine raised an eyebrow.
Yes. In secret, of course, but soon. And as often as possible, so I'm spared the agony of your tortured pining.
She leaned back in her chair, closed her eyes.
It's exhausting to witness. I've reached my limit.
Heart racing, not daring to look at Audric, Riel breathed.
I can't believe you're actually saying this. Why not? I've told you both how I feel about the situation.
Ludovine smiled, eyes still closed.
Or do you doubt my word? No, it's not that, it's just...
The images crowding Riel's mind made a delighted heat climb up her cheeks.
Wouldn't you be embarrassed? That my dearest friends could be happier than they've ever been? Why would that embarrass me? Maybe embarrass isn't the right word.
Riel did look at Audric then. Half in shadow, he frowned at the floor.
If we're discovered, he said at last, even if we explained that you knew and approved, it could be humiliating for all of us, but especially for you.
Oh, is that what could happen?
Said Ludovine blandly.
I hadn't realized.
Riel let out a rush of nervous laughter.
We would just have to not be discovered.
Audric scrubbed a hand over his face.
It's not as simple as that.
Of course it is,
Ludovine watched him fondly.
We'll be careful, and you'll... Well, Audric, you'll have to get good at lying somehow.
And your family? What about them? If my mother finds out, or your father, he'll be studying us closely now.
I can handle my family.
For a long time, Audric stared at the crackling flames.
We can't. He said at last, his voice heavy. Something is happening in Borsvall. The attacks on the border, that report I read,
House Sevillier is our strongest defense against whatever might come south. While we sort out what's happening, we need your father and his soldiers to remain loyal to the crown. And they surely will not if they discover that Riel and I are having an affair.
Riel struggled to speak past a rising despair.
But, Audric,
what did you tell my father? Weeks ago. Enough lies have been told, enough secrets kept.
He glanced at her.
This is not how I want us to begin.
And I don't care how we begin, she protested, stepping toward him. As long as we do. In the blazing silence, Audric's gaze dropped to her lips, and then away.
Perhaps, Ludovine said after a moment, you can simply wait a while, until the danger at the border has passed, and my father's temper has cooled.
Riel threw up her hands.
And then what? He'll suddenly be happy when we tell him what will happen next. Sorry, Lord Dervin, but your daughter won't be queen after all.
No, he won't be happy, replied Ludovine evenly. But he won't be as angry.
And the kingdom will hopefully be stable then, and safe, finished Audric. Whatever attacked our border will have been found out and vanquished.
He took a deep breath, dragged a hand through his curls. Riel moved to stand before him. She refused to touch him, though her body ached to.
Is this really what you want? She whispered.
What I want?
He smiled sadly, moved as if to touch her, then drew back.
Of course not. But it's what we must do, Riel.
He has the eyes of a cow, Corian sneered. Soft. And unthinking.
Riel's wrath rose swift and hot.
And you have the tongue of a serpent. Cruel and repellent.
Corian retreated, a sulky bend to his presence.
Riel? I'm sorry,
Ludovine murmured, rising from her chair.
But I think Audric's right. This is the wisest. Lou, I'm thankful for your selflessness. And for your friendship,
Riel said tightly, a terrible pain lodged in her throat.
But I think I need to be alone.
Then she tore herself away from Audric and left the room. Chapter 34 Eliana.
Because of your generosity in teaching, my lord, it'll take more than a fall from a tower to kill me. One more day, and I will have them.
Message written by the Invictus Assassin Razavel to His Holy Majesty, the Emperor of the Undying. Eliana staggered back to avoid Razavel's flying sword, stumbled over a chair, and fell hard into Na'vi's arms. Simon lunged in front of them, his own sword raised to strike. The two blades crashed together and caught.
Na'vi, get her out of here!
Simon bellowed over his shoulder, just before Razavel let out a harsh scream and swung his sword around to free himself. Simon stumbled against a pillar, kicked a chair into Razavel's path. Na'vi grabbed Eliana's wrist, and together they raced into the crowd. Bystanders had noticed the fight and hovered nearby. Na'vi wove through them, shoving at bodies twice her size when they didn't move fast enough.
Eliana!
Razavel called after them, his words punctuated by grunts and the clashes of blades.
You can't run from me. I'm like you, don't you see? I can't be killed.
Fear was a fantastic energizer. Eliana's head cleared with every step. Soon, she was the one dragging Na'vi after her.
In here,
she gasped, turning Na'vi into the maze of the fighting pits. Narrow paths separated each cage from the next. A turn past one cage, then another, and they were in the thick of the brawls. A bare-chested fighter threw his opponent against the wire wall to Eliana's right. The noise was tremendous, the crowd a seething mass on all sides.
"Back to the apartments," Narvi cried. "We'll be safe there."
"If a fool wouldn't kill him," Eliana replied, "then we'll never be safe from him again. Not until he's dead."
"I'm like you. I can't be killed."
But he was wrong, wasn't he? She could be killed. She wasn't completely invincible. If he stuck her through the heart with a sword, she would die just like any beast that bleeds. And him, his fall off the Maiden's Fold Tower in Orlene, must have been a lucky one. He'd hit the water at just the right angle, avoided the rocks scattering the river. The Emperor had fed him a regimen of drugs, conditioned his mind and body over the years to withstand impossible abuse.
"Could he be an angel?"
Narvi shouted over the din. Eliana grimaced.
"Knowing our luck."
They emerged from the pits onto the open floor. Eliana ran for a set of twisting iron stairs nearby. As she reached for the railing, a body flew out of the crowd and slammed into her side, knocking both her and Narvi to the floor. Eliana pushed herself up, head spinning.
"Narvi?"
She lay unconscious 2 feet away, beside the inert body that had hit them. She must have hit her head against the bottom stair. Eliana crawled toward her. A sword struck her across her back once, then twice. Blazing pain ripped through her body. She screamed, tightened her grip on Arabeth, turned, caught Razavel's sword with her dagger. He leered down at her, pressing hard against their joined blades until she was nearly flat on the floor. Her bleeding back was a twisting plane of fire.
"Hello again,"
his voice rattled, his ravaged face stretched into a madman's grin. He stomped down hard on her thigh, then on her ribs. As she screamed, blinking away starbursts of pain, he raised his sword with wild eyes. She plunged Arabeth into the top of his foot, then rolled out from under him right as his sword slammed into the ground. Narvi shook herself awake, then looked in horror at something past Eliana's shoulder.
"Watch out!"
Eliana turned, ducked in time to avoid Razavel's sword. The tip of the blade caught her cheek. Blood spurted hot across her face and arms. She thrust out with Arabeth. He bashed it out of her hand with his sword. She spun out a hard kick at his chest. He grabbed her leg, twisted, slammed her to the ground. Before his fall, he would have fought her in silence, every movement swift and calculated. Now he laughed, yelped playfully when one of her daggers caught his skin, clucked his tongue when she missed. A tight crowd had gathered around them, boxing them in with pumping fists and wordless, rhythmic cries, hungry for violence. Eliana grabbed a carving knife from a nearby table, whirled to throw it at him. He knocked it easily aside. She found another one, turned. She dropped the knife. It clattered, useless, to the ground, swaying on her feet. She reached out for support, found nothing, fell to her hands and knees. Fidelia. Fog blackened her vision. The nausea returned, sweeping through her with startling violence.
"Look at her," Razavel cried, dancing gleefully around her prone form. "The famous dread of Orlene."
The crowd responded with a chorus of jeers.
"Eliana, get up!"
Narvi frantically tugged on her arms. Eliana tried to stand. Her limbs gave out, and she crashed to the floor.
"Here!"
Her stomach wrung itself into a knot. The world spun, tilting right, then left. Whoever or whatever was pinning her down, it was wrong. It didn't fit. It didn't belong here.
"Run!"
she gasped out, groping for Narvi's hand.
"They'll find you!"
"Who will?"
Narvi's voice was full of panicked tears. A furious cry behind them made Eliana blearily turn. Simon dropped down from the stairs above, crashing feet first into Razavel. The assassin dropped hard, then rolled away with a feral peal of laughter and sprang back to his feet. Simon advanced ruthlessly on him, his scarred face ferocious with anger. Then, turning to block one of Razavel's thrusts, Simon glanced over and found Eliana on the floor, their gazes locked. The world seemed to stop. Eliana's breath caught in her aching chest. They had been here before, not in the fighting pits of Sanctuary, but in a similar moment of danger and flight, of separation. The certainty of that, like suddenly recalling a lyric long forgotten, opened an unfamiliar chasm in her heart. A flicker of some unnameable sadness shook Simon's face. Did he feel it too?
"Run!"
he roared at her. Reality returned. Time spun forward, blistering and unkind. Eliana shoved her way into the crowd. She heard Navi yell her name, heard a harsh cry, hoped it wasn't Simon. She searched for another set of stairs that would take her back to the third floor. She would get Remy and leave. They would run as fast as they could, for as far as they could. She would shave their heads. They would get new clothes. They could make it to Astavar like that, disguised and unrecognizable. She made it to the second floor before Navi caught up with her. The girl grabbed her arm, yanked her back hard. Eliana spun around, pressed Whistler to Navi's throat.
"I'm getting my brother and leaving," she spat. "And if you try to stop me, Navi, I swear I will gut you."
The world spun and wouldn't stop. Eliana dropped Whistler, sagged against Navi's body.
"Eliana!"
Navi sank to the floor with her.
"Get up, please!"
Eliana gasped for breath, her voice choking in her throat. She tried to dislodge herself from Navi's arms, crawl away, but she couldn't move. Then Navi disappeared. A gloved hand came over Eliana's mouth, pressing a reeking cloth to her face. She struggled, her scream muffled. Another hand caught the back of her skull, forcing her harder against the cloth. As her vision dimmed, she saw a black-clothed figure, hood drawn, mask on, gathering an unconscious Navi into his arms. The wrongness in the air swallowed Eliana whole. She wanted to be sick again, but the pressure bearing down on her throat prevented it. A voice at her ear whispered,
"And when the gate fell, he found me in the chaos, pointed to my thirsting heart and said, 'You I shall deliver into the glory of the new world.' And I wept at his feet and was remade."
Then Eliana slipped into a narrow pit where the fading world around her jolted sharply before folding her away into nothingness. Chapter 35. Riel.
The mountain falls under my fists. The sea dries at my touch. The flame dies on my tongue. The night howls with my anger. The light darkens in my shadow. The earth fades beneath my feet. I do not break or bend. I cannot be silenced. I am everywhere.
The Wind Rite, as first uttered by Saint Govan the Fearless, patron saint of Ventera, and wind singers. Riel sat on a throne in the center of a dark room. A narrow light illuminated her from above. Beyond lay a vastness of shifting shadows. She sensed that pieces of a world just beyond her reach were rearranging themselves, whispering to one another how best to play tricks on the foolish lit-up queen who thought she was something. The throne beneath her was made of knobs and ridges that bit into her thighs. A voice whispered to her,
"Look."
"At what?" Riel peered through the darkness. Doing so made her dizzy. "I see nothing."
"Look closer."
Riel obeyed. Days passed. Her eyes burned. She did not sleep. Voices whispered from a distant realm. She rose from her throne. Desperate, unseen hands grasped at the hem of her cloak. She tasted a sour ancient rot on her tongue.
"There is nothing here," she insisted.
Time had shredded her voice.
"Keep
going. She walked for centuries. The whispering voices grew bold. They became a conversation, then a din. They spoke in an unfamiliar language, but still she understood what every word meant, and that all were spoken for her. Maker, Queen, Liberty, Riel. At last, she saw a spot of light in the distance and cried out. Was this finally the end? She had tired of walking alone. She wanted no more of these voices calling for her, of sensing the nearness of others, but not being able to find them. When the light came into full view, she saw it was one she already knew, the illuminated throne. And now she understood why it had hurt her to sit upon it. It was made of bones. Exhausted, elated, she sank down onto it. She clutched the throne's smooth white arms and knew them for the bones of those who had once tried to cage her. "What is this place?" Riel demanded. "I deserve an answer." Shadows slithered around the bright solid wall of her throne, then coldly across her cheeks, her breasts, the curve of her scalp. She closed her eyes. Her mouth fell open to receive a kiss. The shadows became a man. "This is where we have lived for an age," he whispered. He pressed his lips to the curve of her ear. "And where we will soon no longer be, if you have the nerve for it."
"Corian," she breathed. "I don't understand what you mean."
He inhaled deeply. His mouth moved against her cheek.
"Don't make me beg."
Riel brushed her lips along the line of his jaw.
"What if I want to make you beg?" she whispered. "What if I want you at my mercy?"
"Then I shall happily obey."
He moved one white palm down her body, across the flat of her stomach. His knuckles grazed the tops of her thighs, and she leaned back to make room for him. Riel awoke with a choked gasp, her fingers already working between her legs. 3 quick strokes and she came apart, quietly pulsing around her hand. She turned her face into her pillow, seeking relief for her flaming cheeks, but the pillow was drenched in her sweat. She sat up, her body trembling. Eyes squeezed shut, stomach in knots, chest tight around her heart. Fear chasing pleasure, pleasure chasing shame. Then she realized how strange it was that she would have woken up in such a state, and Eveline would have said nothing. "Eveline?" Her voice sounded like it had been run through with razors. "Eveline, are you?" Something hard struck the back of her head. She crashed to the floor. Pain throbbed through her skull and coursed through her body in waves. Cheek pressed against the plush carpet, she found the prone form of Eveline across the room. Hands yanked her up from the floor. A dark, heavy cloth came around her eyes. Someone tied it behind her head too tightly, then fisted a hand in her hair, pried open her mouth, and forced a bitter liquid inside. She choked, tried to spit it up. Her attacker clamped her mouth shut. She was forced to swallow, coughing up as much as she could. Her nose burned, her eyes watered behind the blindfold. People were talking above her head, whispered instructions, distorted and monstrous. Bizarrely, she was upside down. She could feel her head lolling and large arms cruel around her body. "Wake up!" How strange that anyone would tell her to wake up. She was awake. She had simply been poisoned. She tried to speak, made a terrible, inarticulate noise. A gloved hand struck her hard on the temple. She hardly felt it. She was a girl, made of fog.
"Don't kill her," came a voice.
Riel thought it sounded familiar, but the poison was clogging her ears and her brain and every pore of her skin.
"I want her to feel it when she dies."
It was very cold, wherever they had gone. Cold and howling. Strong hands pinned Riel's arms behind her back. Her teeth were chattering. Her nightgown was nothing against the wind. Under her bare feet was frigid, rocky ground.
"For God's sake, Riel, wake up!"
"I am awake," she managed to mumble.
"Not for long," a thin nearby voice whispered. "I'm sorry to say you won't be able to save yourself this time."
The blindfold was ripped from her eyes, and her mind exploded with fear. She blinked into sheer brilliant white, snow-capped mountains, sky and a fine mist of clouds, a cliff's edge.
"Oh, God! All hail the Sun Queen," whispered that mocking voice.
And then the hands holding her arms flung her off the mountain to her death. The wind punched her helpless body through the air as she fell. She had no chance to scream and no breath for it. Freezing wind slammed up her nose and mouth.
"Save yourself," Corian's voice was frantic.
She was in the world, falling through the mountains, and she was also on the ground before her throne in that hollow dream realm. Corian scooped her limp body into his arms and tried to breathe life back into her.
"Fight this! Fight it!"
She knew he was right. She could fight this. She forced open her eyes. The cold pulled thick streams of tears down her face.
"I do not bend or break," she prayed. "I cannot be silenced."
But the poison had formed an immovable wall between her body and the Imperium. She reached for its power and found nothing. She knew then that she was going to die.
"No, you're not," Corian cried. "God, Riel, no! Please!"
Beside the throne, his face raw with grief, Corian cradled her body against his chest. The endless dark world around him sent up wailing, terrified screams. A rush of swirling cold gusted up from below Riel, spraying her with snow. A spinning ocean of gray peaks sped toward her. When she closed her eyes, she saw Audric and Ludivine, and her heart clenched painfully with despair. And she wished. She slammed to a stop, so sudden that it knocked the wind out of her. But she felt no pain, and she was rising. A creature beneath her let out a piercing cry, part hawk, part horse, part some unearthly, lonesome thing that sent a pang of longing through Riel's heart. She finally let herself understand the truth. A chevaille, a god's beast, had caught her mid-air and was now climbing up through the sky with Riel nestled safely on its back between two massive black wings. Stunned, still gasping for breath, she finished her prayer in the brilliant light of the morning sun. "I do not break or bend. I cannot be silenced. I am everywhere."
Chapter 36. Eliana. "We are the ones he calls at night. We are the vessels of his might. We speak the word that he has prayed. Upon his wings our souls remade." The initiation pledge of the cult Fidelia. The world was a flat gray box, and Eliana lived inside it. A floor, a wall, a ceiling. No windows. a metal door with a thin slot cut out near the bottom, and a narrow strip of light underneath it, the only light source. The air filled with faint, distant screams. Slowly, she sat up and realized she was wearing plain white trousers with a matching tunic. Her feet were bare. The floor was cold and hard. Her knives. Her knives were gone, as was her necklace. A cell. She was in a cell. She drew her knees to her chest, held her aching head in her hands. Memories returned to her. Rosavel grinning down at her, the shadowed rafters of sanctuary arching high overhead. Simon crashing down from the stairs, running with Navi, the world lurching around her with every step. Remy. She needed to get to Remy. Her breath came thin and quick. She remembered. She remembered. A hand over her mouth, poisonous fumes shooting up her nose. 3 women gone in 3 seconds. Fidelia. With a wild cry, she surged to her feet and slammed against the door, over and over, throwing her left side into each blow until her head spun and her teeth hurt. She would be bruised, but only for a little while. Might as well keep going then, right? Who are you? She pounded her fists raw, kicked her toes bloody. Release me! Show me your fucking face! And then she remembered one last thing. Her mother. Her mother could be in this place. She threw herself against the door with renewed fervor. Mother? Mother, I'm here! Someone answer me! Answer me! But even her body had its limits. She screamed until her voice gave out. She crumpled to the floor, clapped exhausted palms against the door until she could no longer hold up her arms, then dragged herself to the corner of the cell and folded her body into a tight ball. Eyes fixed on the bright line of white below the door, she waited. She woke up when she heard Navi screaming. Scrambling upright, she called out hoarsely, I'm here! Navi, I'm here! She crouched at the door, ear pressed to the metal, fingers flexed and ready. Silence. She held her breath. Had it been a dream? The screams began again. Heart-punching, shattered sounds like something being forcibly unmade. At first, wordless, and then, minutes or hours later, Navi began to beg for an end.
Kill me!
The screams became desperate shrieks.
Kill me!
Inhuman roars joined the chorus, carved into pieces as if issued from many mouths. Women? Girls? Beasts? Eliana retreated to her corner, light-headed, hands clamped over her ears. She was not the dread in this place. She forgot everything, but the awful truth of Navi's screams and her own vulnerable, trembling body. She was a rat in this cell, and the catcher would come for her soon. The stupid animal part of her brain told her so. Faster than she had ever believed possible, it rose up to stomp out all of her training and left her shaking with fear in the dark. Would they torture her for information, and then feed her to a pit of animals? What information did they want? Red Crown? Navi? God, what they might have already learned from her. Eliana paced. Movement made the fear feel smaller. She practiced slicing through the air with the tray that had brought food she dared not touch.
I shall name you Arabeth the Second. She told the tray, and then laughed, and told herself to stop talking to trays right this instant.
If she lost her mind so soon into imprisonment, it would be an insult to her mother's training.
Arabeth, said a voice behind her, sonorous but warped and faintly amused. A fine name for a weapon.
Eliana whirled, and threw the tray at the shadowed shape that stood against the far wall. A woman, Eliana thought,
tall and thin and transparent. The tray shot through the woman's body, hit the wall, clattered to the floor. Cursing, Eliana staggered back as far as the cell allowed.
What are you? Show yourself!
The woman obeyed, drifting forward until she knelt at Eliana's feet. She was a colorless distortion in the air. Shimmering, thread-thin lights outlined robes, a full mouth, and a mass of hair that fell to her hips.
It's true, then,
the woman murmured, reaching out to touch Eliana's hand. Eliana's vision jolted, then blackened. She swayed on her feet, braced her hands against her knees, fought against unconsciousness.
You don't belong here, she managed. You feel wrong.
I know, said the woman, a great sadness in her eyes. I'm sorry for that. You will get used to it, if it's any comfort.
You're Fidelia! Get the fuck away from me!
I am certainly not Fidelia.
Eliana pressed her fingers to her temples.
I felt this sickness in Sanctuary, right before you took me, and the night you took my mother, and when you took those girls from the slums.
I did none of this, my queen. The prophet does not snatch girls from their beds, and neither do I.
Eliana squinted at the woman, breathing thinly through the ill feeling churning in her gut.
What did you call me?
There have been rumors for months that Simon found you at last,
the woman continued, her voice thrumming with excitement.
But I did not let myself believe it until now. Now I see your face. I hear you speak. I feel you breathe. And I know.
The woman floated nearer, cupped Eliana's face in her hand. Eliana felt nothing at her touch except for a fresh wave of nausea. She squeezed her eyes shut and sank to the floor.
I'm going to be sick, she moaned. Forgive me, my queen.
The woman moved quickly away.
I should not have touched you. It is difficult for humans to adjust. Who are you? What are you, and why are you calling me that?
The woman bowed her head.
I am forgetting myself. If you only knew how long we've been waiting for this day. But then, you will know soon enough.
Eliana looked up as the woman stretched to her full, translucent height. 8 feet, at least. Her elongated limbs reminded Eliana uncomfortably of a spider.
I am Zara,
the woman said.
And I am a wraith. And you are Eliana Ferricora, the dread of Orlean, the last of House Corvery, daughter of the Lightbringer, heir to the throne of Saint Catel, the true queen of Seldaria. And,
Zara spread her long arms wide, her dark smile was full of joy.
You are the one who rises, the fury-born child. You are the Sun Queen, Eliana. And I have come to bring you home.
Chapter 37 Riel. Catel's writings show that out of all the god's beasts, she most favored the Chevelle, perhaps due to its similarity to the white mare that carried her into battle against the angels. Perhaps because its wings reminded her of her beloved Ayava and brought her comfort after his death. A Chronicle of the God's Beasts.
by Rolikhand Dorso, First Guild of Scholars. The Chevelle did not stop until Riel began to heave on its back. They touched down on a small rocky cliff dotted with stubby tufts of grass and sheltered by boulders as big around as King Bastian's carriage. Riel slid to the ground and managed to crawl a few paces away before violently emptying her stomach. After, hollowed out, she dragged herself toward the rocks, seeking shelter from the wind. Every movement sent shocks of pain through her body. The poison had done fine work. She felt as though she'd been hammered up and down every muscle and bone. She hoped she had gotten it all out, and not too late. Then, lumbering hoofbeats approached. She looked up. The Chevelle had crept close, bigger even than her father's largest warhorses, with an elegant arched neck, a long unkempt black mane, and bright, intelligent eyes. It behaved like a horse. And yet it did not. Its nostrils flared as it sniffed the air around her, its ears pricked forward, curiously. But then it cocked its head to the side, as a human might when trying to understand something new. There was an ancient weight to its presence that Riel had felt surrounding no other living creature.
Hello?
She reached out feebly with one shaking arm.
You've always been my favorite.
A sharp blast of mountain wind slammed into her. She collapsed, shivering. Beyond her closed eyelids, the light shifted. Then, at the sound of movement, she opened her eyes and watched blearily as the Chevelle lowered itself to the ground between her body and the open sky. It extended one of its enormous feathered wings. It must have been at least 20 feet long, and gently scooped her close to its body. Wedged between a shell of grey, black-tipped feathers and the warm swell of the Chevelle's belly, Riel breathed. The beast's coat was impossibly soft, speckled grey as a storming sky.
"Are you real?"
she whispered, placing her hand against its stomach.
"Where did you come from?"
In response, the Chevelle settled its wing more securely around Riel's body, then tucked its head underneath its wing. Riel felt the hot press of its muzzle against her back, followed by a warm breath of air as it let out a contented grunt. It was a strange nest, but too cozy to resist. Riel fell into a fitful half-sleep. Her shapeless dreams burned black. When she woke, her mind was clear, and the Chevelle was watching her. So, she hadn't been hallucinating. She remained still, comfortable, and warm beneath the canopy of its wing, and stared up at it.
"I thought all the god beasts were dead," she said at last.
Hesitant, she placed her hand on the Chevelle's muzzle.
"Why did you save me?"
Its nostrils flared hot between her fingers. She stroked the long, flat plane of its face, the swirling tufts of hair between its wide, black eyes.
"I wonder if you have a name."
The Chevelle whickered softly and pushed its nose into Riel's palm.
"Well," she said, beaming. "Then I'll have to give you one."
And that was when she remembered. That thin voice, right before she'd fallen. No, not fallen. Right before she'd been pushed. She remembered it now, and she knew to whom it belonged.
"Will you take me home?" she asked. "I need to kill a man."
The Chevelle watched her, motionless. "It's all right," she added quickly. "He deserves it. He tried to kill me." The Chevelle grunted and rose to its feet. The chill hit Riel hard, but she ignored it, climbed up a boulder with teeth chattering, and slipped onto the Chevelle's back. The Chevelle looked back at her, ears pricked.
"Well?"
Riel wound her fingers through its wild black mane.
How do I get you to go?
And at once, the beast launched into a gallop, snapped open its wings, and leapt off the mountain into the sky. They approached Banegard fast from the north, soaring low over the treetops covering Mount Sibylline, and then circled around the castle to the broad stone yard in front. It was full of people. Riel's father and the city guard, her own guard, pages and stable hands hurrying horses to their riders. Her father shouted instructions. A team of four mounted soldiers took off for the yard's southern gates. He was organizing search parties, she realized, with a swell of satisfaction. There was Audric swinging up onto his stallion, and there was Ludovine reaching up to touch his arm, and there... Ah, there he was, the sniveling little shit. The rage that had been boiling in Riel's heart erupted. She tugged gently on the Chevelle's mane and shifted her weight, turning the beast left and down. Its wings flattened against its sides as it dove. She lowered her body against its neck, closed her eyes. The wind raced past her, and she tugged the power from it like plucking a fiddle's strings. When the Chevelle landed, the crowd scrambling to part around it with cries of horror, Riel did not wait for the beast to stop before jumping to the ground. She stormed across the yard, thrust her palm in front of her. The wind snapped rigid in her hand, like an executioner's noose. Her prey watched her approach in disbelief, cowering and white-faced. She flicked her wrist. The noose of wind caught the man around his neck. Still a good 20 feet away from him, she slammed shut the massive twin doors of Banegard's front entrance, then pinned Lord Dervin Souvillier against the closed doors, and squeezed. He gasped for breath, clawing at the invisible hand closing around his throat. Riel watched him with a hard grin, raising her hand higher. Lord Dervin's body slid up the doors until he hung some 10 feet off the ground, feet kicking wildly.
"Lady Riel," he croaked, his face reddening. "What? Why?"
"Shut your mouth, you filthy coward," Riel snapped. "You know why." Audric ran to her.
"Riel, what are you doing?"
"Stop!" Ludovine threw herself in front of the doors, reaching in vain for her father's feet.
"Riel, you'll kill him!"
"He tried to kill me," Riel squeezed her fingers closer together. Lord Dervin squirmed, gagging. "He drugged me, brought me up into the mountains, threw me off a cliff. I'm merely returning the favor." Dimly, she heard soft cries of shock among the gathered crowd. Ludovine turned, mouth open in disbelief.
"You're lying.
Tell her, Lord Dervin." When the man did not reply, Riel took two furious steps forward and clenched her hand into nearly a complete fist.
"Tell your daughter the truth," she shouted, "or I will execute you for your crime right here, right now."
Eyes bulging, face gone a deep, vivid purple, Lord Dervin at last gasped out.
"It's true. I tried to kill her."
Ludovine's hands flew to her mouth. Dismayed exclamations rippled through the crowd. And still, Riel did not move. Her lungs were afire, the hand that held the noose shook white-hot, and a fringe of bright gold swirled around the edge of her vision.
"Kill him," screamed her heart. "Kill him," roared her furious blood.
"Kill him,"
whispered Corian.
Audric stepped between her and the doors, took her empty hand in his.
"Riel, look at me."
His voice was quiet but firm.
"I need you to look. Please."
Riel shook her head and snarled.
"He tried to kill me." "I know. And believe me, he will be punished for it. I will see to it myself."
She blinked at that. Her vision cleared, her blood cooled. Reluctantly, she tore her wild eyes from her would-be murderer and looked to Audric instead.
"Please, darling," Audric gave her a tight smile. "Listen to my voice and let him go. If you kill him right here, in front of everyone..."
Riel knew he was right. Abruptly she turned away, letting her hand fall. Lord Dervin slid to the ground with a choked cry.
"Call for the healers!" Ludovine cried.